Alaskans soak up the sights, sounds, and some attention at the inauguration.
People would stop us and say, "Are you really from Alaska?" People would shoot pictures of us because we were from Alaska.
From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 20th of January. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, environmental groups sound the alarm over the recent oil supply boat sinking in Cook Inlet.
It would not take very much oil coming ashore at the wrong time and place, and suddenly you have wiped out much of an entire population.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska Fairbanks now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Alaskans crowded onto the Washington Mall today, along with people from across the country and around the world, to watch Barack Obama become the 44th President of the United States.
Obama! 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 Obama!
Democratic Senator Mark Begich had one of the best seats of any Alaskan. He was up on the Capitol stage about 30 feet from the new president. He says the vantage point was pretty incredible.
When you look out and you look beyond the podium and you're looking down the mall there and all the way to the Washington Monument was tens and tens and tens of thousands of people, which was an unbelievable sight.
In that huge crowd were about 300 students from the Anchorage School District. That massive group of middle and high school students had the trip planned a year ago, long before President Obama was even the Democratic nominee. Everyone, including the administrators and chaperones, paid their own way. Carrie Sumner is the assistant principal at Central Middle School. She says all the kids wore hats that said Inauguration 09 on the front and Alaska on the back.
And that was a huge conversation starter. People would stop us and say, "Are you really from Alaska?" People were shooting pictures of us because we were from Alaska. People would say, "Oh, do you know Sarah Palin?" And that was pretty much the only Palin question we were getting. They were just so excited to see people from Alaska.
Sumner says the students woke up at 4:30 this morning and have been on their feet walking all day, but no one is complaining. Emma Hill is an eighth grader who made the trip. She says there was so much energy and excitement on the mall, it was just crazy.
It's amazing. I feel so lucky because I know it's so important and such a big part of history.
Hill is attending the student inaugural ball this evening with the rest of the group from the Anchorage School District. Social studies teacher Pam Collins from Golden View Middle School says the whole event has been incredible and somewhat overwhelming for the students.
They have never seen so many people in their lives. And I think it was probably millions of people. The crowds were incredible. There were strong moments of the silence and just enthusiastic energy.
Alaskans who couldn't make it to D.C. didn't let that stop them from celebrating the historic moment. Residents gathered in large and small parties around the state, marking the inauguration. Charlene Kowchek held a breakfast gathering at her house in Anchorage. She's half Inupiaq and half white and says she appreciates that the new president has the unique perspective that goes along with a mixed race background.
When you come from two different races, it just shapes you in a way that is really unique and challenging at times. And it's a lifelong learning process and how to not just live in the world, but live with yourself and who you are. And it gives you insight. And I was excited to see someone from his particular background because I think that's going to help him relate to everyone. Because it's a very mixed world now.
More than 1,200 people watched the event on the big screen this morning in Juneau Centennial Hall. Amid the cheers, there were tears as people of all ages, political stripes, and races watched the 44th president and the first Black American take the oath of office.
I was so proud, so happy. It was really, really neat.
I never thought I'd see this day, you know, a minority president. I'm old enough to know that I've seen these signs, no natives allowed. and to see, you know, the laws coming to an effect and to have a minority being inaugurated as president, just a wonderful day, just wonderful.
This is one of the happiest days I can remember. It just talks about our responsibility, and I think that's the bottom line.
Kathleen Donohoe immigrated to the United States from Ireland 16 years ago. She has never applied for her citizenship.
When I listened to his speech, I pledged that today I would register to take the citizenship classes because I want to now be American.
The event was sponsored by the Juneau World Affairs Council. Heritage Coffee provided a special roast called Obama Blend and couldn't keep up with the crowd. They were expecting about 300 people, but ended up giving out well over 2,000 cups of coffee. Mitch Seavey is the Kuskokwim 300 champion. Seavey crossed the finish line in Bethel with seven dogs at 2:30 this morning. He was just 8 minutes ahead of Martin Boozer. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Shane Iverson reports.
Seavey is from Sterling, Alaska. The victory is the second in a row for him, and he has now won the K300 sled dog race 3 out of the last 4 years. Despite Seavey's recent habit of winning the race, he said he was not expecting to do it once he was on the trail.
Sometime this morning, I was sure I was not going to win this race and probably never come back to it. And so I'm pretty pleased. It's some sort of surprise.
Martin Boozer had a one-minute lead over Seavey at the Guitluk checkpoint, about 17 miles from the finish. Despite a three-dog deficit, Seavey's team was able to pass with about 10 miles left. The start of the K300 was delayed for 2 days because warm weather made river conditions unsafe. The warm-up also made slick runways, which delayed drop-offs of race officials and dog provisions. Officials responded by cutting over 40 miles off the course. Seavey said that was also a concern for him.
This team never goes really fast and it never goes really slow. And so somewhere in between, it works better for me if the trail's longer. And like I said, I just about used all the runway here to pass the last team, so I would have liked it a little bit longer, but it worked out for us.
Seavey is only the second racer in the K300's 30-year history to win more than twice. Boozer was also competing with a chance to earn a third victory, but he said Seavey's team had the fastest pace down the stretch.
I found out I got a lot of good leaders, but I don't have that team or leader discipline that it takes to beat Mitch Seavey at the last kick. You know, my dogs, they listen real well, but then when I need to have them go in overdrive, they kind of tell me that they're long-distance dogs and not sprint dogs.
The winningest K300 racer of all time, Jeff King of Denali, placed third. He was an hour and a half behind Seavey. He said he was pleased with the race, but he lavished most of his praise on the crop of young local racers competing this year.
Seeing Mike Williams Jr. in Tulik Sack with a really gorgeous-looking team, very fun. Pete Kaiser out there with a really, really nice team. Clearly there's a generational change going on, and I'm going out while they're coming in.
King crossed the finish line with 10 dogs, which he said are all headed to the Iditarod in March.
Any dog that finishes the Cusco team finishes in the Cusco team in a competitive race such as this has got a ticket to the Iditarod. There's just no question about it. They don't make dogs any tougher than dogs that can finish the Cusco.
By the time the race began on Sunday, cold conditions turned melted snow into ice. Racers said the 50-mile stretch between Bethel and Tulik Sack was the most grueling. Ken Anderson of Fox, Alaska, came in fourth and said the trail had forged a stronger team.
This is a real challenge for my leaders. I'm from woods country, and I don't do any of this open country G-ing and hawing, and it was real frustrating for them, for me. And it took a long time. We wasted a lot of time doing circles out on the ice, you know, early on, and finally, you know, this last 100 miles or so, they were keying in and listening pretty good.
Just 16 racers competed in this year's Kuskokwim 300, a record low for the event. Reporting from Bethel, I'm Shane Iverson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Unalaska students learn about some interesting presidential history.
When he was in the White House, he used to always go skinny dipping 2 hours before sunrise.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Public Radio Network builds bridges of communication between urban and rural Alaska. APRN covering the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
The supply vessel that went missing for a time after it sank in Cook Inlet has been located and appears to be staying put. The Monarch was delivering supplies to the Granite Point platform in western Cook Inlet when it was pinned against the platform by ice. The vessel was damaged and sank with between 35 and 38,000 gallons of fuel on board and as much as 2,000 gallons of lube oil and other chemicals. It now lies in about 86 feet of water. Audubon Alaska Director Stan Senner says the fuel presents a threat to the local ecosystem.
Right on shore, near the Granite Point drilling platform, is the Trading Bay State Wildlife Refuge, which is considered to be an important bird area of global importance. And if an oil slick were to reach the tide flats, even in the middle of winter, there are birds called rock sandpipers using those tide flats, and they would be highly vulnerable.
Center says the western side of Cook Inlet is prime winter habitat for nearly all of the rock sandpipers that nest in the Pribilof Islands. He says this subspecies of the birds only numbers around 25,000.
It would not take very much oil coming ashore at the wrong time and place and encountering those birds, and suddenly you have wiped out much of an entire population. And this is happening right, and this potential exists right here under our noses in Cook Inlet.
Department of Environmental Conservation on-scene coordinator Gary Folley shares the concern over the potential for a large offload of fuel. Folley says working in Cook Inlet in the winter is extremely dangerous. The currents are swift, 4 to 5 knots, and the ice conditions hazardous and unpredictable. Folley says sonar is being placed on the platform for longer-term monitoring of the Monarch, and some dives on the vessel may occur if it's safe. He says it may be spring before the Monarch can be raised or the fuel offloaded. Folley is hopeful that time in the shipyard right before the Monarch went to Granite Point will help keep the diesel on board. He says the fuel tanks have vents that are self-plugging.
There's a hard plastic ball inside the neck of the gooseneck vent that plugs up against the opening, and when they work properly, prevent the fuel from leaving the tank, even when the vessel is underwater. And so considering these vents were either replaced or serviced while the vessel was in the yard, they should be working properly.
The majority of the fuel load is diesel, which is considered non-persistent by the state because it's lighter than crude oil, and some of it will evaporate and dissipate if it does spill. But Folley says it's still a serious situation that the state is very concerned about.
We require that any spill to water be reported. So we receive spill reports in the neighborhood of half gallon. So any spill is important to us, and certainly we consider 34,000 gallons of fuel a lot of oil.
Coast Guard spokeswoman Sarah Francis says fast currents, broken ice conditions, and the vessel's position on the bottom make it difficult, if not impossible, for spill containment booms to be useful. Today was a day of formalities in Alaska's legislature as Lieutenant Governor Sean Parnell this afternoon opened the new legislative session.
Pursuant to the Alaska Constitution, Alaska Statute 24.05.160, and the Uniform Rules of the Alaska Legislature, the House of Representatives assembled here for the first regular session of the 26th Legislature is hereby called to order.
Lieutenant Governor Parnell welcomed the lawmakers to the Capitol for himself and the governor. He said, as it is a new day in the nation's capital, it is also a new day in Alaska.
It really is, in my estimation, a time to lay down our swords and a time to pull together for the good of all Alaskans. I wish you the best in that. I'm here to tell you that I extend myself and the governor on behalf of that end, and will work with you through this session. So congratulations on this new day.
The House elected Mike Chenault of Nikiski as Speaker. The Senate formalized the election of President Gary Stevens of Kodiak. Chenault said he was honored to be chosen, and he promised an open-door policy to all members.
As your Speaker, I pledge to you that I will be three things: fair, honest, and sincere. I also have expectations that will help instill pride, integrity, and respect back to our institution. I look forward to working with all of you as we strive to advance the agenda of our citizens and for the rest of the state during the next 2 years.
Members get down to more pressing business tomorrow as agendas and expectations become more clear. The House Finance Committee has already scheduled its first hearing tomorrow afternoon. The State House and Senate have organized into bipartisan majorities this session, but House Republicans aren't offering the same power-sharing agreement that exists between Senate Democrats and Republicans. The Senate has organized around Kodiak Republican Gary Stevens as Senate President, with both Democrats and Republicans sharing committee leadership positions. The House majority has organized around Kenai Republican Mike Chenault as House Speaker, who is welcoming three Western Alaska Democrats. As Ann Sutton reports, they expect to turn their alliance with the majority to their advantage.
Rural legislators used to buck party lines to unite over common bread and butter issues, but through reapportionment and with proportionally fewer people living in rural areas, they've lost the numbers and seniority that gave them clout. Dillingham Representative Bryce Edgman hopes to win some back.
With the energy dilemma in front of us, with rural immigration, with all the other sort of challenges that are in front of rural Alaska, it made sense to strongly consider and then ultimately decide to join the majority party.
Edgman, who's starting his second term, 12-year veteran Reggie Jewell of Kotzebue, and freshman Bob Heron of Bethel will join another Democrat in the majority. Richard Foster of Nome has long caucused with the Republicans. That leaves Woody Salmon of Beaver, the only rural legislator left in the Democratic caucus. Edgman says the move wasn't personal, it was politics, but it's a blow to minority Democrats who've seen their numbers grow in recent years, along with prospects of one day forming a Democratic-led coalition. Edgman says he would have preferred a coalition, and there were some discussions this year, but when a sliver-thin Fairbanks race was decided in the GOP's favor, Edgman decided to join the in-crowd. What he'll gain from the move remains to be seen.
I'm hoping to gain better access to the decision-making process. What the outcome of things might be, given the price of oil at the moment, is anybody's guess.
Michael Carey, an editorial writer at the Anchorage Daily News, says their timing may not be the best. With recent oil prices scraping bottom at $25 a barrel, there's less money to go around for lawmakers' districts.
This doesn't look like a great year for a capital budget. It probably isn't a great year for the operating budget, because of all the problems we have with oil. This looks almost like a let's get done and get home year. So maybe it's the second year that they're hoping for. Maybe they just made their deal in the wrong year. They should have made it last year.
But it's not like there's no money. When oil was headed to $140 a barrel last year, lawmakers socked away billions of dollars in savings accounts, money that remains within reach despite words of caution from legislative leaders. And Jerry Macbeth, a political science professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, says if spending is tight, rural lawmakers will want to keep a sharp eye on any cuts to the operating budget.
Rural areas have a large number of proportionally state positions there and are heavily reliant on state funding for services, certainly education, public health services, and the like. So that would be an advantage being in the coalition. Nobody wants to be left on the outside.
The three rural Democrats were given minor leadership positions. Edgman will co-chair the Special Committee on Energy, for example. Jewell will continue to sit on the Finance Committee, a position he's already held for 6 years. Meanwhile, with 14 Democrats left in the minority, they'll lose some committee seats, including dropping from 4 to 3 members on finance. But what may be even tougher to bear are the broken relationships, says Carey.
Because these guys have been tried and true buddies, several of them anyway, and now what's it going to be like? They're not going to be in the same caucus. How are they going to treat each other? Formally, I guess it'll be fine. Informally is really the question.
You just have to roll with that punch, and we're doing that, and I believe we'll do it successfully.
Minority Leader Beth Kurtula says urban Democrats have long supported issues of importance to Bush Alaska, and she describes her former compatriot's decision as unthoughtful. Macbeth calls it politics as usual.
Bush members, most of whom have been Democratic, have been quite skillful over many years in joining coalitions and thus bringing benefits to rural areas of the state, which are, you know, exceptionally needy, I guess, as compared to urban areas. I mean, they don't have a tax basis in most of those areas.
Kurtula says her members will be organizing late this year. Decisions on leadership and committee positions are usually made following the November election. But Democrats were waiting to see the outcome of the Fairbanks race recount. Then ice storms in Seattle scuttled plans to meet over the holidays. Times are even tougher for the Senate minority, veteran Republicans who've all held powerful positions in the past. With only four members this session, they don't even qualify as an organization. Eagle River's Fred Dyson says majority leaders have assured them of some committee seats, though finance is not among them. And Jean Terrio of North Pole will continue as minority leader. In Juneau, I'm Ann Sutton.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Rasmussen Foundation is announcing March 1st as the deadline to apply for an Individual Artist Awards grant, which provides funding directly to artists to support their creative work. You can sign up to participate in one of the Rasmussen information sessions to be held the week of January 19th by calling 297-2876 or go online at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
The state sent a delegation to Emonik today to assess the economic crisis in the Western Alaska community. Five representatives from a diverse array of state departments met with community leaders and residents this afternoon. Ron Creer is with the Division of Public Assistance. He calls the visit a fact-finding trip. He says he listened to residents describe the impact of the high cost of fuel combined with a lack of decent jobs.
I heard some very, very moving testimony about the struggles that families are having, the challenges they're facing, fear they have, the concern they have for their children, the well-being of their whole community. You know, it's almost regrettable to say that some of what I heard didn't surprise me, but the intensity of it was very humbling.
The plight of residents in Emonik was detailed by Nicholas Tucker Sr. in a letter he wrote to the Bristol Bay Times early last week. The state is considering a request from the community for a disaster declaration. Officials last week said it was unlikely to be approved because of strict federal guidelines. Creer says residents of Emonik brought up a range of other options at the meeting, although none are short-term solutions. He says many people just want help finding a way to make a living.
I think that the economic situation has gotten to the point where they're feeling at a loss to some extent. It's not that they haven't stopped trying. It's just that the pressure has gotten to the point where perhaps they feel that the state can provide some relief.
The delegation will be in Emonik until Thursday, when they're planning to visit the nearby community of Kotlik. Creer says leaders in both communities put together resolutions asking state representatives to visit. The Senate confirmed six of President Barack Obama's cabinet members today, all by unanimous vote. They include Interior Secretary Ken Salazar and Stephen Chu as Energy Secretary. Both men now oversee departments that have a significant impact on Alaska. Senator Lisa Murkowski's Energy Committee ran their nomination hearings last week. As the ranking Republican, Murkowski took a lead role in their questioning. Also today, the Senate confirmed retired General Eric Shinseki as Veterans Affairs Secretary, Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack as Agriculture Secretary, and Education Secretary Arnie Duncan. Murkowski asked Duncan to visit Alaska after his confirmation so he could see firsthand the challenges of education in rural Alaska. Tomorrow, the Senate Commerce Committee is scheduled to hold a confirmation hearing for the Transportation Secretary nominee. Former Illinois Congressman Ray LaHood, a Republican, is slated to go before the committee. Alaska Senator Mark Begich will question him, since Begich is a new member of Commerce. Students in Unalaska are celebrating today's inauguration by impersonating all of the U.S. presidents and teaching the community about our nation's history. KUCB's Ann Hillman found out how.
Unalaska's 5th and 6th graders are celebrating this week's historic presidential inauguration by teaching the community about U.S. history through a presidential wax museum. 44 students will each dress up like a different president and pose in the hallways of the school. To activate the president and hear a monologue about his life, drop a coin in the can in front of him. What you hear might surprise you.
When he was in the White House, he used to always go skinny dipping 2 hours before sunrise.
That's Alana Kochutin, who will play John Adams, the second president. Adams' habits were apparently rubbed off on his son, John Quincy Adams, played by Lauren Arrington.
When he became president, his life became really routine. He got up at 5 o'clock, he started a fire, read his Bible, and took a bath in the Potomac River. But one day, a thief came and stole his clothes. So he had to ask a boy passing by to go and get his clothes from the White House.
Lauren says Adams benefited by learning about the presidency from his father. Adams died after suffering from a stroke while arguing against slavery. Other presidents, like James Buchanan, did not hold such strong views. Buchanan, who preceded Abraham Lincoln, is called one of the worst presidents of the United States for not preventing the Civil War. He's played by Jamie Ammons.
I picked Buchanan because I was the last person to pick.
He would have rather been someone else.
If I had first choice, I would have chosen a president that made me a better person. Like how Abraham Lincoln decided that he wanted to be honest and never tell a lie during his presidency.
Lucio Howard purposely chose a president well known for lying, Richard Nixon.
I'm Nixon, and I say the Watergate scandal was not part of my doing.
Lucio says he likes that Nixon spent his childhood learning how to debate, but he doesn't think Watergate was such a good idea. He does think incoming President Barack Obama was a good choice.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll have great stuff happening in the next few years.
Monty Baker, who plays Obama in the Wax Museum, agrees he will bring positive change.
I'm not really sure, but I would think it would bring, like, more people to work.
The 5th and 6th grade classes hope to bring positive change as well, not only by educating people about the history of the United States, but also by giving all the donations to Feeding America, the country's largest food bank. In Unalaska, I'm Ann Hillman.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Rosemary Alexander and Ann Sutton in Juneau, Shane Iverson in Bethel, and Ann Hillman in Unalaska. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Duncan Moon is our vice president for media production. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great evening.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.